What's up, friends? Welcome back to the newest episode of Power Spike as we have kicked things off for Worlds 2023. The play-ins are done. It was pretty cool to see how the Western team got that extra seed. No one knows how the fuck that happened. We'll just skip past that part into beating down all the smaller regions. Dominantly, let's just forget the fact that they also had to do a best of five reverse sweep, but it's totally fine. We have a Vietnamese team making it on through. PSG, Talon, you know, finding a way to let down a region, letting down a huge fan base, something that Maples used to with his time on TSM. Gone. Monty and Dom here to break down all the actions from play-ins. How are you guys doing?
There was a lot of flame encapsulated in just your little opening monologue right there.
I don't know. Deegan's on demon hours. I can tell, bro. This guy is not himself right now.
You want to know why? It's because, and you know this, and publicly people know this through Yamato Cannon's, tweet earlier. Riot put out messages saying there's only certain people that could be on a co-stream, and so I was hopping in several people's co-stream, LS's co-stream. And then he was like, hey man, they messaged me too. And I was like, what in the fuck is this? You guys have the rights to co-stream. Let me just hop in. I'm brand safe. I'm pretty cool. Otherwise, I'm just staying up super late and not necessarily getting the kind of return on investment that I wanted to get with my time. It's just straight up demon hours. And now you got Demon Deegan here. So
that's horrible. Imagine
what would happen if I got on one of those co-streams.
I mean, yeah, you know, that's impossible. We've tried.
Yeah. Too good.
Of course, just a reminder to everyone, this episode of Power Spike is brought to you by Trolley Sour Bright Crawlers. The multi-flavored sour gummy worm that wants nothing more than for you to chew their delicious sour heads and bodies into pieces. Trolley Sour Bright Crawlers crawl to the beat of their own yummy gummy drum and truly unlike any other sour gummy out there. Thank you to our friends over at Trolley for making this episode happen. Make sure to get your tongue-twisting, mind-warping sour thrills at trolley.com. And they're available where, Monty?
At everywhere. Absolutely everywhere. Except everywhere. Korea, I found.
Everywhere except for Korea. Okay, nice.
Everywhere except for Korea. But I did get sour octopi in Korea. So, you know, they don't have the bright colors, but I can get sour octopus. And also Trolley peach rings. The Trolley peach rings, yeah, are awesome. So the Trolley stuff's available here. Also, I think the sour octopus is just more fitting for Korea. Have you guys ever eaten the Korean dish? It's not technically alive,
but it's moving, and that's the one that moves, right?
It is recently deceased, but the tentacles are still moving because of muscle reactions. It's actually quite good.
No. I keep my tentacles to fantasies, not to food. So,
all right. I keep mine to neither. Like, what the fuck? What is wrong with you people?
Anyone? Anyone else? No? All right. Okay. Well, thank you, Trolley, for supporting our content here on Power Spike.
Thank you, Trolley, for supporting Power Spike and Deegan's fantasy life.
Yeah. This is true. All right. Speaking of that, you guys can head on over to my YouTube channel as well, as I've got the post-game interviews from play-ins from all the different players that are there. I'll be doing that coverage as well, remote for the first half of Swiss stage. And yes, I will be going to Korea for the second half of the Swiss stage. So be there with Monty and our producer, Andrew. We will be hanging out for Worlds through the finals, and that'll be a lot of fun there. So those are kind of my plans. Dom, you're in demon hours out here with your co-stream in the sack, right?
Yeah, no, I'm on insane demon hours. I mean, it's not even demon hours anymore because I just don't sleep anymore. So it's just like, I'm just up. Like, I'm just up 24-7, living off coffee. I mean, it is what it is. It's the life. No, I mean, this was a good experience for me. I learned that I can no longer sleep during the day. Like, just at my age, the capabilities to sleep during the day just doesn't exist. If I go to sleep at 7 a.m., I'm waking up at 9. That's just how it goes.
Even with, like, I mean, actually, I've been to your place, like, with the blackout curtains and everything. Yeah. That's all I need. If I have blackout curtains, I'm good. So, that sucks.
Yeah.
Are you resetting your sleep schedule for the next 3 days?
I'm going to try to sleep after this.
Okay.
right after this. The second that this ends, I'll try to go to sleep. That'll be my plan. And then I'm just going to try to wake up at like midnight, because the only reason that I did my sleep schedule like this is because of the BDS series being 11 p.m. and then this other one being 10 p.m. Like the series yesterday, the Vietnamese series was 10 p.m. So it's like, for some reason, they thought that it would be like good. Like the first day, why did they even start at 11 p.m.? Like this one, I could understand. Yesterday, I could understand because it's a double best of five. So it might go the fucking distance and you don't want to have the draw show like in the middle of the night in Korea. Fine. Why the fuck was the WQS at 11 p.m. when everything else was at 2? Somebody tell me. Makes no sense.
Yeah.
It's a one best of five. What the fuck?
I think probably it was like the best time for NA and EU together would be my guess.
Yeah, it was a great time for NA. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 6 a.m. in Europe and 11 p.m. or midnight East Coast.
I see.
That was the best
never
time.
Mind. Jesus. Well, I mean, I just thought it was insane that they did two best of fives in the same day, which is the most League of Legends they've ever actually put together in an international tournament before. Like a possible 10 game day is pretty insane.
Yeah, they did it a couple times, and I think they did it actually in play-ins last year, because I remember I did a sponsored stream after a double best of five that went the distance, and I just did like a fucking 12-hour stream that day. It was interesting.
This one went 9, right? It was 9. Yeah. And those BDS games, that last game was like 45, 50 minutes. I mean, we'll get to it, but like that was a long best of five too, unfortunately. The only thing that didn't happen were pauses. There are no pauses in that series. So yep. Either way, a kind of getting used to this year's Worlds and Worlds Hours. The last thing, I guess, tangentially about Worlds is, isn't it cool? I think it's cool how diverse the LoL Park looked. I saw a lot of like non-Korean folk there that were there, even if BDS wasn't playing, even if once Golden Guardians got knocked out. It was pretty cool to see like the fan base showing up there from all across. And I think they did a piece on like, hey, where are you visiting from? And you had a lot of different fans out there. So that was kind of cool. I wonder if it's just like people don't care because it's plans, and then during like Swiss, then all the tickets have already been sold and bought. Monty, what do you think?
I don't know. I mean, look, a lot of Westerners come to Korea for Worlds, or foreigners, like you know, Chinese people as well. At least in 2014, which is the last Worlds that I was in Korea for, we actually, Susie, my wife and I, put on a fan event, like a dinner, just a get together, because there were going to be a lot of people here coming to the World Finals, the actual like final day of the tournament in the Seoul World Cup Stadium. And like we put out some, you know, we said, come here to this part of Seoul and for a dinner so you can meet other fans. And we rented like we reserved like an arcade barbecue restaurant in that neighborhood. And we actually had so many people come that it spilled over into two other restaurants. There were probably 300 people that showed up, and it was crazy. So I think there are a lot of people that fly in from abroad to actually go to Worlds.
That's super cool. I hope we're able to do that again this year. I mean, given the plans looked pretty diverse, I hope so. Yeah, I mean... Yeah, did you notice that, Dom? How it wasn't just Korean fans and Chinese fans there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm one of those people, I just don't see race. I just see people. So when I was watching, you know, like I was just happy that there's human beings out there.
That's great. Well, how that's progressive great. Of you, Dom.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess that's a good segue to get to Fraud Alert. Let's head on over to this week's Fraud Alert, where... we are dissecting a couple of teams that I guess presented themselves as world championship contenders and ended up being not so good. We're talking about, yes, PSG Talon and the Flying Oysters, and yes, the Golden Guardians. Let's get into it. This week's Fraud Alert. Also, yeah, Croc as well, and Brazil. You know, we kind of threw out like maybe that would be a team. Like all the teams that like had experience that are coming back. You have Detonation Focus Me with like basically the same roster. Here's Loud that's coming in with basically the same roster. You know, maybe they can do something. And you know, they got out. I guess they did make record with Appleman being the oldest player in League of Legends history to make it to Worlds. So that was cool. But let's start with the big ones, and let's start with the main one. Dom, I'm setting you up. Go with the Americas. Go with either Loud or Golden Guardians here.
Well, I mean, I just was so impressed by how bad Golden Guardians really is, because if you consider how BDS looked versus other teams, like think about how BDS looked when they played against Wales, like they lost 2-1 to the Vietnamese team that didn't even make it to the main stage. And then on the other side of things, they almost got 3-0'd by PSG. And when Golden Guardians played BDS, it looked like they could literally never win. It was like, yeah, this was going to be 10-0, 15-0, 20-0, 50-0. Like it was just impossible for BDS to win one fucking game. So think about how bad NA really is in the context of the entire world. Like we're at the point where the fourth seed from NA just looks objectively worse than top two from Vietnam. That makes no sense.
Mati.
So this is the result that I think should have happened. Like, I think it's good that the Vietnamese teams actually were competitive against some of the lower seeds from NA and EU, because Vietnam has a huge player base and they did have a really vibrant scene, and they were starting to get some of these results before COVID really fucked everything up for them. And so for me, at least, it's nice to see more international competition, or like Vietnam becoming a rising region again. But that said, I mean, look, man, I bought into the whole Gory is homesick. So once he's back in Korea for a month and theoretically he's not homesick anymore, I expected a better performance. If anything, we got an even worse performance. Like I get NA is weak at mid lane, but when you spend this year being the best mid laner overall in North America and you're facing Nuke, shouldn't you like win? This is what's so confounding to me, is that the Golden Guardians, their only strengths or their biggest strengths completely vanished, and they were never, apparently they just can't come back for whatever reason. It's deeply baffling. Well, I'd be surprised if we saw Gory on this team next year.
I think that outside of just the gameplay, like the prep was so egregious. When you consider the fact that they've been prepping for this best of five for like over a month, they were there for weeks before BDS. And then you look at how they actually played and what they decided to draft. Do they not know which players are on their team? Like, look at who River has been the entire year. He loves Jarvan. Jarvan is getting banned. Okay, what about the Vi? Vi came back. This should have been a perfect pick for them. They should have been playing Vi Talia, Vi Ahri, the things that they actually used domestically to get wins in spring. Like, those metas are now back, and you see how they play. And what is he playing? He's playing Talia, he's playing Belveth, and these are not champions that he plays. Like, he doesn't play those champions, and it doesn't even make sense considering his play style. It's not like, oh well, those champions maybe he didn't play because they were, you know, weaker, and now they're stronger in the meta, so he's gonna pick them up. They are the opposite of how he plays the game. So in what world are they actually going to get wins over another team that's good, that actually knows their strengths, if they don't even play towards theirs?
Yeah, and you know, to your point, a lot of the River Gory synergy was being active around the mid lane in the early game, and Talia makes it basically impossible to play that style, not only for River, but just as a team. Like, it vacates all of their advantages.
Yeah.
Really weird. I asked Artemis, who I thought was one of the best players in play-ins, hey, what does Vietnam, and what do you think of the LCS? And he, you know, I guess through the translator, again, it's all translated, he said, LCS players are interesting because they don't really stick to the meta. Strategically, it makes it difficult to play against because you don't know what to expect. Which is like, they don't know what the fuck we're doing, what they're doing. We don't know what they're doing.
That's usually the answer you would hear teams give about G2, right?
But I think go ahead, Dom.
I also just think it's hard to be the first game of Worlds on this patch, because even though you've been scrimming a lot, you know, this, you haven't had any kind of stage games to really refine any of your outlook or strategies. And so it's tough. And if you get the wrong read, there really isn't, there's no second chance for you. Right. And things that are working in scrims don't always work on stage, because people play a lot looser in scrims than they do on stage. So sometimes it can give you false positives. It also depends on the unique scrim environment, the bubble that you've been scrimming in. sometimes very weird picks come out of that. And this just absolutely wasn't it for Golden Guardians. You didn't see the play there. You didn't see the strategy there. It was a pretty pathetic outing.
Pretty pathetic outing. And then it's just the standard NA thing where the worst performing players on the team are now the imports. And it's like, how the fuck did this happen? Like, Skill Vampires, I thought that they were located in North America, but now they're in Korea. They're still fucking there. So it's really sad to just see how the game's open, because I actually think Licorice played pretty well. I mean, he had leads. I mean, sure. he actually put himself in a position where if his teammates were playing at a human level, he would be able to carry these games. And they just weren't. So it feels weird that Gory and River just played bad for the last like 2.5 months and they somehow got away with it. Like they were dog shit in playoffs. And you thought that because they were so consistent for the first 7 months, them being bad for like a 2-3 week period would be okay. But then they showed up and they had an even more egregious world qualifying series. So they just dropped the ball at the most crucial moment the entire year. And I feel like not enough like blame or like focus is going on that, because that should really impact their ability to get jobs in the future if you know that they collapse like this, or at least they showed that they collapsed in the most important moment of their entire year.
It's not great.
Yeah. So when we go to the fraudulent level here, Dom, what do we rate this out of 10? And then, you know, keep in mind the fraudulencies that we used for, I guess, earlier in the split. When we did the recap with FlyQuest, like where do you rate them?
I mean, I would say that they're at least like a 7 on the fraud scale, a 7 or an 8 for me.
I'd say 8, just because remember that this was a team that was potentially a favorite for the LCS title heading into playoffs, and like this is the end result. So they can't be a 10 because we already got disappointed by them in the playoffs run. But you would have thought that they could have bounced back from that playoff run and at least gotten their shit together with the extensive boot camp that they had in Korea. And the fact that that didn't happen either is just, it's pretty bad.
Yeah. I don't know, right? I think that's, when I think about it, I think that's high, but also this is the one that I bought into the most. I think probably the most. I was so confident they would come out and show up, and you know,
I mean,
Monty,
we said that they were favorites.
Yeah, I was very confident.
I had BDS, but yeah,
they didn't show up at all. So I think in this context, 8 I think is fair. Even though now you look back, there are a lot of signs that were not great, and they weren't able to shake it on off.
They didn't win a game. They didn't win a game.
Yeah, but they didn't even look good. And that's what makes me sad. Because I don't.
It was not competitive.
Because it wasn't indicative of like how good they are. Like that just seems to be like so
what
normal.
That just is how good they are.
Right, right.
That's just how good LCS is. And like NRG, the best team, just gets absolutely fucking put in the dumpster.
Correct. That is true. But like, I just can't accept that because they looked so bad. The draft was bad. The play was bad. It wasn't. You know, who he getting fucking scooped up as Nico, like as the minion, thinking like it was nothing, was just bad. It was just bad. So for you guys at home, please let us know in the comments below how you would rate this fraudulent Golden Guardians outing for Worlds, right? Again, coming into the year, Golden Guardians had lowest expectations, make it a second place, make it a Worlds, should be a success. But man, this one sucked so much butt. It was really bad. Speaking of sucking butt, getting reverse swept sucks a lot. And that's what happened to PSG Talon, who looked like they could do anything. They made BDS look like Golden Guardians. It looked so bad in games 1 and 2. And then the tides turned. It was not, necessarily pleasing League of Legends watch, but those were some exciting fucking fights in game number 3. And then all the theater and nerves in game number 5. What did you have here, Monty, between for Talon and that BDS squad that did pretty good? And what would you rate them on fraudulency scale?
So first off, I have to start with, I was really depressed by the PCS team's performance. I mean, it's true that the Taiwanese teams have not been as good ever since Riot kind of took away their more prestigious regional competitions. And they've been on a downward slide for a long time, especially as many of their best players started heading internationally, whether that was LPL or LCS occasionally, right? So I guess this is kind of the expected result, but you would have thought that one of these teams might be able to get through into the actual Swiss stage of this tournament. You know, the fact that CFO lost to Wales, I think was pretty surprising. And PSG looked better. I would say, obviously, they didn't drop a game during the bracket stage of the play-ins, but also just couldn't put BDS away. And there were just a lot of, I think, really puzzling decisions that were made by this team. Like, if we talk about game three, I just struggle to understand why you would be going crown on Talia and trying to put all of your eggs into the AD carry basket instead of just building Leandries, which I think might have actually substantially changed the outcome of that game. And then game number five, you're not even playing to the way that you're itemizing a lot of the time. Like we see, what's his name? Ozzy? I don't know how to say it properly.
Yeah, I called him Ozzy.
Yeah, Ozzy. You know, he was like, he was on Hullbreaker, and yet they were constantly team fighting and they were refusing to build resist. Like they had double Spear of Shojin at one point in time for these constant team fights. And I think if a couple of these things change in terms of itemization, like I don't often say this where I think that itemization really makes or breaks a game, but I think it might have broken three and five.
I think the itemization wasn't good. Leandres is definitely better there on Talia when you're not experiencing like much dive threat. I would say the Hullbreaker was fine from Gnar. But I thought it was really weird that he went Shojin afterwards. I thought it was just like, if you're going to be team fighting, if you want to have the best of both worlds, you build Hullbreaker and then you also build Sterax. And that will be your like combination of, okay, we can team fight, but I can also split. But then there was also points in the game where it felt like PSG was desperate. After the solo kill on Olaf bot lane around like level 14 from the Gnar is sitting bot lane and he has Hullbreaker. He's completely fine. And instead of just continuing to push the lane because the other guy is dead for like 40, 45 seconds or something like that, he bases, buys, and TPs to Baron and allows the enemy team to get a favorable fight where if he sets bot lane with the Olaf dead, he has to be matched by the by Nuke. And then if he's matched by Nuke, then that means that it's 4v3 on the other side of the map. You get full control. Then maybe you could make a play from there. So I think that there was so many opportunities that they could have just extended their lead on the map if they played properly. But they just kept on opting into like these team fights that weren't good. I'd say that was a problem. The itemization was a problem. But also, I think that there was a big problem in terms of how they adapted in the draft. Because if you saw what BDS's strategy was, they were banning out Ozzy's best champions, right? They're banning out the Rumble, they're banning out the Kennen. So if they're banning out the Rumble and the Kennen, and you don't have extra answers to like the Darius, to the Garen, then you just have to start banning out Adam's champions. Like then we're just in a world where we're banning a lot of top laners. The fact that they stuck so long on that like Xayah ban and Kalista ban, I think made no sense. Like
the Kalista ban was really curious to me because it's not like Crowny was very threatening on the Kalista in the game that he played it. And then the Kalista ban shows up in game three and they hand over the Kai'Sa, which Wako was doing really well on in the first two games of the series.
Yeah, so the reasoning for the Kalista ban is because Crowny hadn't shown Kai'Sa so far in the series, or like he hadn't shown it in the entire play-in. So they think that Crowny doesn't play Kai'Sa, and the answer to Kai'Sa is Kalista. Like, people really like Kalista into Kai'Sa. So they think that if they ban the Kalista, then they can get a free Kai'Sa without the Kai'Sa being countered by the Kalista. But once Crowny showed the Kai'Sa, they kept the Kalista ban. That's what didn't make sense. Like if you want to do that, like I'm down with the logic on game number three. I understand the original logic because I think it makes sense for somebody who's not playing a champion to show that he actually plays an OP champion. Then if he does it, you adapt. Then you drop the Kalista ban, you know?
And you first pick it because you're on blue side in game four.
Or you just drop the Xayah ban and you first pick the Xayah. Like the fact that you're banning two ADs and you're giving Adam like these champions. Or another thing you could do is you could choose to go red side so that Adam is forced to blind pick his champion and save your last pick for your top laner. I mean, there's a bunch of different things you can do, but it felt like they just didn't use all of the options they have. I mean, the fact that they're up 2-0, one of the advantages of being up 2-0 in a 5-game series is the fact that you're going, like, if you're going to get reverse swept, you get three games, or you're going to get two games at least of side selection. But, like, they didn't use the side selection to their advantage. They just kept on the same side, and then Adam kept on getting picks that he wanted.
So obviously draft, huge part of it. And it was, you know, I think a lot of those complaints were heard across Twitter and across streams everywhere. But also, Sheo looked like lost. He looked lost in game one and two, and he had multiple huge, like execution wise, he had multiple huge smites in game three to keep them alive, to get to the points where BDS could continue to stay into it. And I feel like that momentum shift, it felt so reminiscent and so much like, wow, this is what a team needs. They just need something to go their way, because it felt like draft wasn't going their way. Nothing was really going their way. And it was cool to watch, because I was ready to go to bed. I think a lot of people were ready to go to bed. All right, let's get this draw show over and go to bed. And smite after smite, Sheo kept him in it. Why? How do you think that the play changing happened? Like, is it just, hey, they drafted better? Because game three wasn't a great draft. It wasn't a great draft.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that there was a point in game number three, I believe, when there was a like attempt, or I'm not sure, maybe it was game number four, but one of the games, it was the zero game for Nuk where he played into Silas. I think it was game number three.
Yeah,
where he goes for a play to try to like dive the Silas and absolutely fails, and the Silas kills him. And I think that they actually just hit rock bottom in that moment in the series. No, I think that they actually hit rock bottom where it was like, well, we might as well just fucking go out swinging, because like we've pretty much essentially lost. Like, and I think that actually being at that point, they were able to just play freely because they felt like they had nothing to lose anymore with how the games were going. So, yeah, I mean, there was a couple things that changed. I think that BDS's approach in the beginning of the series was not great to start off with. When you're playing a series like this and you have Adam on your team, why are you drafting Sion? Why are you drafting Sion into like Kennen game one or whatever? Like, come on, man. Like, you know who you have. You know the players you have. Ban out Rumble, ban out Kennen. You have to ban out champions that enable Adam to play his champion pool, and he has to play his fucked up Juggernaut champions. If you don't do that, you're going to lose. And I feel like Golden Guardians, you know, did the same thing, except they never adapted that BDS did in this game, where there was a lot of teams that just weren't willing to stick to their own style. Like, they want to play good overall League of Legends, but this is play-ins. Like, the level of play is not that high. You need to stick to your guns and do what you've been doing all year. Like, the only way I could see the Sion pick actually working out is if they went for that Sion cheese level one, the bullshit that we saw in spring all the time in an MSI. If you want to do that and that's your idea with the Sion pick, I'm down. But if you're actually just laning the Sion 1v1 directly into the Kennen, it's not going to be good for Adam.
Monty?
I also think it's just an issue of giving up a lot of power picks in that first game. Like, we saw, especially in LPL, the Maokai Jace combo become just stupidly dominant towards the end of the LPL playoffs. And if you are good at running that combination, it becomes really, really easy to win games. And teams that can't do that are, like BDS, for example, because they can't play Jace, are going to have a lot of really big problems moving forward, because there's just, once you start hitting the Swiss stage and you see teams that can do this, especially the Chinese teams, you will have a very hard time. And it forced, you know, the strength of this, of Jace in the mid lane, even forced players that have literally, like BDD had literally never had a Jace game in his entire career until the end of summer. And now he has to play it too. And he started showing it. So I think there's a lot of issues here, but I agree with Dom. Like, if you are going to have these giant holes in your champion pool, you just have to go back to what your strengths are, at least in the play-in phase, because teams are just not good enough.
You have to, and they don't have practice.
Yeah. They don't have practice against these champions. Like, nobody's fucking, you know, playing. Nobody's playing Garen into PSG Talon in scrims. Like, that's not happening.
You need to use the draft to tailor the game to make your champion pool as favorable as possible. That is what it is. Even if you think like, oh man, we can't waste two bans on top laners in the first three. Like, we're going to give them so many OPs. Who gives a fuck? Like, you just have to do the things that are going to make your champions effective, because you are a flawed team. And if they are a good enough team to take advantage of that, and they can just, not only could they beat you if they get the counter picks, but they can also just beat you in a standard game where you're on your specialty picks and they can play like a better standard than you, well, then they're just a better fucking team and you lose anyway. The idea of trying to harm yourself and be like a C tier version of yourself to try to like make them play at like a fucking like D tier low, it doesn't make sense. Like, you need to play your best game and match in to some champions that are going to be strong. It just is what it is. And I think that that's why BDS won the series, is because they were able to do it. And PSG was not willing to do the same thing. PSG was not willing to enable their players to play a more comfortable game. They gave BDS everything they wanted and they tried to play better champions. It's like, dude, it doesn't matter if you play Jax into Garen and you don't know the matchup, doesn't matter if you think Jax is a better champion than Garen, you're going to lose.
It's God, also man. a lot of the PCS objective setups were just like pretty bad as well. They seem to forget where they would see Labrov and then he would walk into Fog of War, and then they would be confused seemingly when he would actually show up on a flank as Alistar. Right? Like, their vision control was bad. They weren't marking people properly. They weren't playing around objectives properly a lot of the time. It was depressing. It was very depressing.
Yeah, wasn't the last fight in game 5 just like Labrov with the flash headbutt pulverized combo on Waco? Like, it was just out of nowhere. They were A-ramming. It looked like North America for a little bit, guys, just in case you don't watch LCS. But it looked like that on the world stage. And it was just, yeah, exactly. You had full vision of
Jungia saw, they didn't have the vision of the flank, but he saw, Jungia saw Labrov walking around the flank. So he knew he was there. And also, I mean, it's just a macro play at that point in time, too. Like, yeah, I get that Baron's spawning, but you also have an inhibitor down in bot lane. You don't actually have to posture that aggressively, especially if you see Labrov wrapping around for a flank play.
Yeah, well, PSG Talon, with the hopes of the PCS on their shoulders, go out in the group stage. No upsets will be happening here in this Swiss stage by the PCS squad. What do we rate them in terms of fraudulency, given the fact that they looked good, they've had a lot of this core in place, and of course they were up 2-0 in this best of 5? What do we rate them here, Monty?
Maybe like a 6 out of 10. I mean, if let's just reassess our expectations coming into Worlds. Like, we thought the Western team, whether it was going to be Golden Guardians or BDS, would make it out, right? Mm-hmm. And then we probably thought a PCS team would make it out. And look, they almost did. So they can't be that fraudulent, right?
I mean, I don't think I would go even lower than that. I would give them like a 3 or 4 fraudulency, because they also, like, they performed and won their side of the group or whatever. And it was unfortunate for them that BDS ended up losing to Wales, because BDS should theoretically be the strongest team in this play-in. So the fact that they ended up 4-0-ing their group and then had to play against BDS, like, kind of sucks for them. Like, that's just unfortunate with how the bracket is. But I wouldn't say that they're like a super fraudulent region. I mean, I didn't think that PCS teams should have been much better than what they showed. I would say that, yeah, they were like a 3 out of 10 fraudulency. I think that they performed about at the expectations that I had.
All right. Well, there you have it here from our guys on the fraudulency of these squad, both these squads. I wanted to shout out real quick Jimian, again, former 100 Thieves Academy mid laner, spent some time here. His English was really good. He understood all the memes when I was doing the interview and had some really good games. And even in their loss to BDS, but wasn't quite able to overcome some of his teammates there. Chaosi as well on the hook champions as well. It was very fun to watch this Flying Oyster squad when they were going, and then all of a sudden just got stumped real quick. So we'll see what the PCS has in store moving in the future. Now, before we get to our next segment, y'all, wanted to give a quick shout out to our podcast network here at Last Free Nation. You obviously follow a lot of us for our esports content across multiple different titles. And we've said it a little bit about the culture channel that we've been pushing out, nerd culture, gaming culture. Well, we've got a trailer to not just talk about it, but show you. Let's take a look.
In a world full of endless sequels and soulless remakes, ruled by tyrannical corporate overlords. But hope remained, as there were some who resisted. A few good men took it upon themselves to fight the good fight, to create content for all, and to forge one last free nation. Risen from the ashes of esports, they dare to discuss
the aesthetic of that subculture, the themes of that subculture.
They keep pushing this technology. I haven't really ever liked it, but this time around, I was totally in.
He's going to go mad ambitious here, going to be something big. It's not at all. This is one of the most understated. If you hadn't told me it was him, I'd never guess.
Analyze.
Incredibly, we add humanity to the monster. And the monster's always super more interesting.
Demonstrated the concept that evil is ultimately self-defeating.
It's the cycle of the inevitability of that existential horror.
And critique.
Like, none of the things I would normally criticize this show for, I can apply to this episode.
Because it's boring. These are just smoking doobies.
Also, where did they get it?
What's their weed supply? What's the dealer? Their dealer's unbelievable.
To laugh.
It's obviously that, isn't it? And it's like...
And then they all start shooting in the place where he was. Like, they don't have any sense of object permanence.
To love.
Okay. The romance. The emotional gravitas.
Continue. Do you want to breed?
And most importantly, to flame.
It's ridiculous. And it's just bad. It's just a bad way to end this movie.
You're going to go, oh, the graphics haven't aged. What, you
oh,
idiot.
They look great.
You fucking idiot.
That made no sense.
From Last Free Nation Culture, 5-time Korean hype train conductor, Monte Cristo, Shen 1 of 2, Doa, Esports, Thorin, and Hell in a Cell champion, Richard Lewis, presents to you, Nerd Legion, for your fantasy and sci-fi needs, and Foreplay. A fun foray into genre classics. Join them every week as they dive headfirst into the best and the worst of TV and film and bring to you expert opinions.
Crucially, one of the best things this movie does is it doesn't give you all the answers.
Hot takes.
And how many fucking silly-ass episodes are we going to have this season?
And a true love for cinema.
Pierce that really exquisite veneer. There is something great about this film. There really is at the heart of it.
Only at Last Free Nation Culture.
For all your nerd needs, and whenever you need to breed, just like Monty said, Last Free Nation Culture coming to you here again, taking over the world at content. Monty, what was that?
we've started. We have two shows. So Doe and I do one called Nerd Legion, where we talk about sci-fi and fantasy shows. We just did our last episode on Ahsoka. We're doing one for Halloween on the Fall of the House of Usher, and we've got one for Loki coming up as well. And then Foreplay is a show that I do with Thorin and Richard, where we do different genres. So we do four movies, hence the name Foreplay. So we do four movies in a specific genre, and then we move on to the next genre. So we did cosmic horror, then we did 80s vampire movies, then we did film noir, and the last film noir one on LA Confidential should be coming out soon. And then the next one is 90s action movie, where we're starting with Face Off. So it's been really fun. It's been really fun. So if you guys want to subscribe to that channel, it's greatly appreciated. And you can watch along with us, especially the movies, because we pick great movies, honestly. And so it's a lot of fun to watch them and discuss. So
yeah,
thanks for supporting that.
That is... Flowers might get mad at me for this, but that is something we would do at Flowers' house. We'll go to Flowers' house, put on an 80s or a 90s action movie.
Nice.
And partake. And it's great. And it's one of the best things. So if you guys want to go ahead and do that, make sure to head on over to Last Free Nation Culture. They'll give you the video and the movie that you're going to watch and get to it. So I hope that you guys do.
Yeah.
Like the 80s.
We will. The 90s action ones are actually, so it's going to be Face Off, which is obviously great. The first Tom Cruise Mission Impossible. Total Recall, the Arnold Schwarzenegger one from 1990. And Con Air. So pretty ridiculous.
Okay, Con Air. I thought Con Air, you say in Air Force One, because Total Recall is Quaid.
Yeah, it's gonna be great. And our editor does a really good job of getting like the clips into them too. So it's funny. You guys will enjoy it. Go head on over to that channel and subscribe.
All right. Well, make sure to head on over, do that. Thank you very much. Let's get back to the league content with our next segment that we've got coming up. It's Devoured, brought to you by Trolley. And we're talking about the teams that looked terrible at play-ins. Not the World's Qualifying Series. Yes, we could throw Golden Guardians in there, but, you know, we already beat them up a little bit. We're talking about Detonation Focus Me and R7. Again, champions of the region, constant Worlds participants. And this year, very much like previous years, constant Worlds punching bags, they got devoured by the competition. Let's take a look at how that happened. All right. Again, just as a reminder, this segment of Devoured is brought to you by our friends over by Trolley Sour Bright Crawlers. We can't get enough of their sour and soft gummy texture and absolutely love their surprising flavor combinations. It's the perfect adventure for your mouth while you are gaming. And these two teams got absolutely destroyed, Monty.
Yeah, you know what's great about these sour octopi is like the legs have a different flavor than the body. So it's very enjoyable just to bite off their legs one at a time before you go into the body. You know, that's my favorite part of these octopus, because I can't get the sour bright colors. I haven't found them yet. I shouldn't say I can't. I have not found them yet, but it's been very easy to find octopus and peach rings. So there you go. Korea.
Andrew and I will smuggle some in. Because that's how.
Okay. Sounds great. All right. The illegal gummy worms.
Illegal gummy worm operation going on.
Yeah. That's not going to give me trouble, right, Monty?
No.
Right. All right. No, I don't know. Like, you know, when you go to immigration and you have to fill out the form, they're like, do you have any like livestock or food and stuff? I don't know.
We have octopi.
We have
gummy worms.
We have sour octopus. But yeah, anyway, look. I think it's hard to fault Detonation Focus Me. Like I enjoyed some of their performances in the past. Got some good money from Esports Bet actually when they beat RNG that one time.
Okay.
That was pretty entertaining because I was doing the bets. I think last Worlds, and the live odds were still crazy in favor of RNG, even though they were down like 8,000 gold or something. And I was like, nah, DFM's definitely going to win this game, even though it's a huge upset. So that was fun. But I think at least for DFM, it's somewhat understandable just because they did have all of the internal team drama with their coaching staff and their top laner. They're asking a guy who hadn't played professional League of Legends in 2 years to come back. And that's going to be really hard, especially in a tournament where it doesn't look like it's going to be that easy to fall back on tanks with the top lane pool that's available at the moment. And it was a bummer because like I enjoyed DFM when they were at their most underdog and like the potential for the upset was there, but it did seem kind of doomed them coming into this event given the roster troubles.
Yeah, I mean, no Evie and no win. That's just how it goes.
But Dom, it's if you have Evie, there's no win, and then there's also no Evie, then there's no win.
No, it's if you have Evie and your team is not full Japanese, then
I did miss his Urgot this world.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of expected, right? Like LJL is playing with a sub, and then R7, like, just they should be the worst team at this tournament. If you look at everyone else, like, who should they be better than? I mean, Brazil has, you know, more money. There's obviously a much bigger region than they just have more players than LLA. I mean, LLA is just it's just an underfunded region that's not that popular. Like, why should they be any better than this? LJL is always confusing because you would think that with their proximity to like Korea, the fact that they can play on Korean servers and all that, they would have slightly better players than they do. But
the ping is about 50 between Korea and Japan, so the ping's not terrible, right? It's about the same as you would get from the
Taiwan
West Coast.
Like 70, right?
Yeah, and in the U.S., like the players who are playing in solo queue on the West Coast get 40 to 50 ping typically to Chicago. So it's about the same as if you're playing in an LCS player playing in Los Angeles, an average solo queue game. At least that's what I've noticed because I play Apex on the Tokyo servers because that's the closest one. So it's about 40 to 50 ping for me typically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, just with Detonation Focus Me. Apamin getting slotted on in there, I think previously played for Sengoku Gaming, I think was the throwback there. You had Harp finish with a total of, I think he was 0, 13, and 19 across all four matches. It's just, it's a bummer because we know this team can be good. You had the internal struggles, you had the roster change at the top end, and it's just... You couldn't find another top. There's no other top laner. Also, Yutapon was kind of running through dudes as a top laner during the LGL finals and during the season because he played during the season. They used their backup AD carry. I can see, all right, captain, star player, what do you want to do? And he's like, well, I want to play AD carry. And they're like, okay, we can't sign someone that's already on a roster, so we have to sign another random guy that is unaffiliated with anyone. And they go,
I mean, clearly. Clearly, they thought that this was going to be the best move, that they stood more of a chance with Yutapon at AD carry and Upman in top lane than by having Yutapon in top lane. But you also have to think that Yutapon is now switching back into the AD carry role when he's been practicing a bunch of top lane. And yeah, there's a big gap for him to kind of reacclimate, and he's been playing it for many, many years at this point, so it shouldn't be that hard. But even so, like, it's a tough ask. I don't think they had very high expectations given what happened. I think they were frankly very lucky to even get to Worlds with the problems that they had.
Yeah. Upperman did put out a very heartfelt quote. I think he had it with Deserto or Inven. I should definitely attribute that correctly. Let me triple check. But because he's a dad, he's 31, he came back and he had like a real heartfelt message for his kid despite getting pretty destroyed. It was a moment of life and death, just like a person on an airplane flying in the darkness, but dad didn't give up. He poured his everything into it and wanted to tell everyone that he faced the moment without shame. Wherever you walk the sports of esports like dad, or choose a different one, I don't know, but I hope you never give up on your dreams. It was really sweet. But at the end of the day, still a very Yamcha cosplay situation here by Upperman just getting beaten up at the top. Because it's like, okay, cool. You're going up against Rest over CFO, who's not a bad guy. And then you go up against Adam, who got to just run circles around him. Those are two real tough opponents for him. On the flip side with LLA, Monty, just what can Rainbow Seven do? Can they do anything? Because they are constantly good.
I mean, it was a really bad showing from them. I don't want to pile on too much because, as Dom said, this region was supposed to be the weakest team within this group stage. They have everything going against them from a logistical angle, from a competitive angle. But even that said, like, picking counter matchups for Bong and then doing what he did was very depressing to watch. Although I still love his name.
Yep.
Great name.
Me Bong.
All right. Well, there you have it. A short and sweet segment here on Devoured because both those teams, they had their moment in the sun and they got
and sour because we didn't want them to get stomped like this, but that's just it was short and sweet and also sour. There you go. Just like the trolley sour bright crawlers.
Thank you, Monty. Of course. All right. That was Devoured brought to you by Trolley Sour Bright Crawlers. Make sure if you want to get your tongue twisting, mind warping sour thrills, head on over to trolley.com and help out your boys. Take a picture, post it there. We've been compiling them. And it's very helpful when you guys do that, the comments as well. So thank you so much for doing that.
Trolley loves it. So do that.
All right. Next up, we've got high key, low key, no key, because we're leaving the play-in stage behind. And now, actually, before we leave the play-in stage behind, one more question. Were there any players that stood out to you that didn't qualify in Dom? Who were the best players from play-in?
I mean, I think Artemis. is somebody who definitely stood out. Like, his mechanics were just really crisp. The fact that he didn't make it is pretty sad. I thought he was better than Slater, but yeah, it's just a team gap in that game. So, I mean, he looks legit. Like, he's one of those players who I would like to see move up and you know, play in a better region. It's really hard to judge how good playing players really are. Because, for example, you had Doggo, who absolutely took over. Everyone was singing this guy's praises. When he went to LPL and he started playing against, like, some real motherfuckers, like, when he's playing against, like, you know, Jackie Love, Viper, all this, like, he's probably, like, the 12th best AD carry in China. Which, I mean, depending on how you look at it, that could be considered very good, you know? So I'm not going to say that this guy is, like, you know, one of the best AD carries in the world or something, but I would like to see how he played against better competition.
Monty, do you have anyone else that stood out or more?
I think there are some names that impress people overall, like Root, Jimian. These are players that I think surprised many people by the level of their performances. I don't think we saw anything outrageous from teams that were in play-ins, but it was, you know, Sparta, at least when he was on Cassante, when he was on anything else, maybe not.
Yeah.
But I thought Jimian had some nice games. I thought Jimian and Root had some nice games overall.
Dom, greatest player from Vietnam to play in China, obviously is
SOFM.
SOFM. Do you know how old he is or how young he is? Because he's now the coach of Team Wales. He was coaching there.
Really?
He's probably 25 at this point, no?
Yeah, he's only 25. That sounds crazy to me because I feel like he's been around for such a long time. Yeah, he's a 98 baby. Yeah. God, nothing gets by Dom.
Yeah, you test my fucking LPL knowledge, motherfucker. You think I'm don't know how old SFM is? Like,
yeah, that's pretty.
That's a reasonable thing not to know.
Yeah,
not for me, man. I'm that guy.
Dom's that guy. Holy shit. All right. Now let's move on over to high key, low key, no key. For the Swiss stage matches, we had the draw. Everyone stayed up and watched the banger of a series because I think people went to bed after game one, woke up like 2 hours later to see the draw, and then got to see two more games because it was that crazy best of five that ended up happening there. So we get to see the draw. Which opening Swiss stage matches are we most excited for? So high key, low key, no key excitement on the Swiss stage now that we have the schedule. Let's get into it. Dom, let's start with you. Which one jumps out you as like a no key? This is a snoozer.
As a no key? Well, mm-hmm. I think any match Gam plays is going to be a no-key. Just straight up. it just is what it is. It's not even Flame, right? But what is it, Gam versus Genji? Like, I mean, there's no way that ends up being a good match. Gam is just going to get absolutely murdered, especially when you consider how Gam plays, where they're not really proactive at all, and they kind of just wait for the enemy team to make a mistake. Genji won't make that mistake. Genji will be ahead in every single lane, and they're just going to smash them in like 25 minutes.
No key.
I mean, I think the problem with Gam is that I thought for a lot of play-ins that Wales actually looked like the better team.
Yeah.
But apparently they are just incapable of playing against Gam for whatever reason, and that they must int nonstop. Like, I thought Wales was the favorite coming into that match based on what I had already seen. This is all to say that based on Gam's performance against other teams that weren't Wales, I agree that really there is no hope for this team. I think they just have a weird buff, or maybe they just have a debuff against other Vietnamese. I think it's a debuff. They have like an abyssal mask aura against other Vietnamese teams only. And there is not really going to be very much hope. I think JDG versus BDS is incredibly doomed. I think T1 versus TL is massively doomed. Fnatic versus LNG also probably very doomed. So those matches I'm not very excited for.
Yeah, just shout out to our one VCS fan who was like excited to talk about VCS today. I think that's Jules. Sorry, Jules. Gam is just gonna get trucked. The only small sliver of hope I will offer, because I'm the positive one on all the shows, is that this is mostly the same. This is Gam Esports, who did defeat JDG and prevent them from going in just last year. We're not talking like Nocturne Levi like from 4 or 5 years ago. This is last year. So could happen. We'll see what happens later. But when I think about it, I think the T1 TL1 is just scary as fuck. Like APA, I hope you enjoy this experience because you know, we're gonna be watching some illegal stuff happen.
Like the T1 TL1 is gonna be
I'm not that worried about APA. Like I think that APA versus Faker, like I mean, I don't think APA is better than Faker, but I don't think APA is going to get like completely fisted in lane. I think the bot lane is going to get fisted. I think that's how this matchup is going to go. Like Guma, Carrier are just going to dump on Yeon. And then
Summit Zeus is going to be hilarious because, you know, coming into that Zeus is going to just go hard because it's Summit. I think top lane is just going to be a massive dick swinging contest, and it should be fun at least.
But that at least like bodes well. That's the best player getting best player against probably someone who's better, at least being aggressive, being proactive. Just don't put him on like a tank, you know, please. Hopefully that'll be something there. Yeah. But yeah, I'm worried. All right. Let's go to low key here. What are we low key excited about? Monty, let's go with you first.
I guess I am low key excited about NRG versus Weibo. Just because, look, man, I don't think Weibo is going to lose this, but the Chinese team collapse is real at this phase of Worlds every year. And if one team was just going to randomly sprint it, it obviously would be Weibo, especially in a best of one. So I don't think NRG wins this, but I can't say that there's 0% chance that they do.
Dumb. How do you feel about that one?
I mean, I think that Weibo is going to kill them. I think that it's going to be. I think they're going to get fucked. Like, I don't think it'll be close. Like, that's how I feel about that one. You want my low key? I'll go with C9 versus MAD.
I think that's like the Clown Fiesta.
Well, I mean, I just feel like that. Like, that's a pretty even matchup. That's one of the more even matchups that we're going to get. We have NA versus EU. You know, I think MAD is probably slight favor, but you never know how MAD's going to show up internationally. So definitely a chance for an A.
Yeah. Well, just the Shy against Big Dokes. Yeah, we'll see what happens there. I want to, like, you know what I want Palafox to be? He's not. But do you remember for a little while, Dom, when we on face check, we would call Power of Evil. He was like, his skill was neutralizing the other mid laner. It was just like he just wouldn't let them pop off. That's what I want Palafox to do here with Xiahou.
And yeah, it's never happening. Xiahou is literally like he's probably either the third or the fourth best mid laner of all time. Yeah. Like behind Faker, Rookie, and debatably Scout. Showmaker could maybe also be in there depending on like how much of a career you want to look at. I mean, Showmaker at the peak, he didn't have the longevity really. But yeah, I mean, Xiahou is just the best player on the team by far. So he's going to be up inside Palafox and it's going to be tough to watch.
You were very descriptive with what you expected of that match. Is there a draw after every round, Monty? Is that how this works? I've never seen this tournament.
Yes.
Okay.
Basically, you know, all the 1-0 teams get randomly drawn against each other, and all the 0-1 teams will get randomly drawn against each other. And then from there, it's 2-0 teams, and then 1-1 teams, and then 0-2 teams, and then the 0-2 teams and 2-0 teams get drawn against each other, and then those 0-2 teams and 2-0 teams are in best of threes instead of best of ones, whereas the 1-1 teams are still in best of ones. So that's how it works.
Time wise, that just seems so ass. You have what, 16 hours, maybe 14 hours before you play to then figure out who you're playing. If you play first, I mean, I guess it doesn't matter. If you end up playing first the next day, you have 14 hours and you got to sleep at some point, right? It just doesn't seem like really conducive to prep. And these best of ones feel a little,
I mean, was the
crazy
old system where you had to play against three different teams in the same day and three best of ones? Like, both systems suck in terms of prep because Riot refuses to use good formats. So there's no upside, really.
I guess I just hadn't thought of that one. I guess
for me, I guess low key excitement would. I think it sounds bad. I think it's Fnatic LNG just because I'm excited to see LNG, and I know that Fnatic, if they show up, you know, Noah can be quite the nuisance. So getting to see LNG out there is going to be fun. It's not a walk in the park test. They've got to show up, but getting to see young Gala again is going to be good for me. And then
I think that matchup is incredibly doomed for Fnatic, just because if you think about what LNG does and you think about Fnatic's primary flaw being mid jungle synergy and 2v2 around the mid lane, and you think about what Scout and Tarzan can do for Humanoid, and like Noah, Gala is in incredible form right now, and this is an amazing patch for Gala. So I think Fnatic is going to get absolutely wrecked.
All right, let's go high key. Dom, kick us off.
G2 Dom 1.
Oh yeah,
this is what I'm high key excited for. I think the G2, the thing about G2 that I really like is that they're a strong prep team. Every time that they come into like a tournament, a new patch, they really have their own take on it. And normally, from what we've seen, they're pretty good at finding out what actually is like hidden OP. They're open minded as a team when it comes to trying new champions, you know, that are recently changed. And I think that they'll come out with something interesting that we haven't seen so far at the tournament. And I don't think that Damwon is going to be able to beat G2 hard enough early game for G2 to not end up winning. So I think the G2 is actually like favored in my mind in this best of one. And I just think it'll be cool to see what they come up with.
I agree. Look, if we're being honest about Damwon, they still haven't really fixed a lot of their fundamental flaws. We also had Dylan Falco on the last episode of Summoning Insight, so you guys can go check out what he said about their prep at boot camp as part of our preview episode. But look, this is a team that's extremely good at designing level ones. They are probably the best level one team in the entire world, and that really matters in best of ones. And they're kind of set strategies and set plays that they use, and they're very, very accustomed to how to play off results of their own level ones because they practiced them and drilled them so thoroughly that this can be really dangerous. And it's not like Damwon is some sort of late game monster team. They make tons of shot calling mistakes in the late game. You know, arguably the reason that they got here was because Hanwha Life was incredibly underwhelming down the stretch, but there was a pretty big gulf between the top three teams in Korea, Gen G, T1, and KT, and Damwon. And Damwon's wins a lot of the time come from Canyon going crazy. But I think if you know what champions he's going to go crazy on in the jungle, like, you know, if Damwon's on red side, you will not let them have Taliyah. Like, that's just stupid. Don't let them have Taliyah unless you have a plan to deal with that. Do you want Canyon potentially playing jungle Nico? Because that's where he got a lot of his impressive wins. But he didn't look great on a lot of things. Like, his Maokai and Sejuani games are not amazing by any stretch of the imagination. So this is a team that I think is very flawed, and while they are still good, G2 has looked excellent, and I agree with Dom's points about them not only being prepared, but being surprising. This is the team that was willing to give up the Rakan during the end stages of the LEC and play the Lissandra support. Mickey X has been probably the best Western player in the world this year. And if they have more picks like that, if they can lay more traps for people, I think this team's getting through to the bracket.
Best Western player in the world. I like that.
Do you disagree?
No,
I think he has been this year.
Yeah. Better than the best Western players in Asia. I'll say that.
Fair enough. But yeah, this is a team that I think can do very well. And I think this also leads in very nicely to us talking about their odds over on EsportsBet, who's back sponsoring Power Spike for Worlds. Thank you very much. Because right now they are an underdog at 2.516 to D plus Kia at 1.543. Would you make this wager? I will dominate.
Yes, 100%. I mean, this is something I would take, not just because I think G2 would win. Like, I still think it's going to be a relatively close matchup, but when you sports bet, you have to not be betting based off what you think is going to happen. You have to be betting based on, is this line actually accurate when it comes to percentage chance for teams to win? I don't think that there's that this is accurate. I don't think that, you know, Damwon is going to actually just beat them. Like, what would that end up being if we put it in an odds calculator, like 65 or 70% of the time? I just don't think that that's the case here. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a pretty close matchup. For me, I would say maybe it's like fifth. Like, I think G2's maybe slightly favored, like 52, 48, something like that. So anything that is higher odds than that, I'm definitely going to take it on G2's side. So I would take it for sure.
All right, we are going in sight unseen to these teams, so we'll put 50 USDT onto G2 here. Anything catch your eye, Deegan?
I mean,
any wagers you'd like to make?
The largest numbers are all the NA teams. Oh, no, I'm lying. You have GAM at 11. You have BDS at 11 against Gen G and JDG. But, you know, I like simple math, Monty. And what number seed is Weibo?
They are the fourth seed.
They are the fourth seed. What number seed is NRG?
They are the first seed from Powerhouse.
That's right.
Region, North America.
That's right. An all North American plus Ignar team and FBI, whatever, you know, he counts as North American here at 6.5. Everyone doubted this squad. Why not them? Which has been the rallying cry of NRG. Why not them? There's a lot of reasons why not, but not 6.5 odds reasons why not. So give me NRG here.
Yeah, they are at 6.454 to Weibo at 1.123. So look, I would take a flyer on this. We'll put 25 USDT onto this one just because as a flyer, I think that that's fair. That's fair.
All right. Chef Deegan is out. Dom, what are you looking at?
I'm gonna do something here. I'm gonna take Mad Lions because they are, I think it's a 50-50 and they're slight underdogs. They're they're about at 2.1 versus Cloud Nine. I've been so depressed by Cloud Nine watching them play. And so there I think we go with we'll go with 50 on to Mad Lions as well. I know a lot of people are gonna be excited. I don't think Mad Lions is good, but this is a tough matchup to call. KT and BLG is a little too close for comfort. I have no idea who's gonna take that one. But anyway, guys, if you want to do some stuff over on esports bet, you guys can head over there. And they have, of course, the normal promotion of the 50% deposit bonus. Up to $100 in USDT or another cryptocurrency, but they also have a lot of raffles going on. So during Worlds, you can actually go over to Competitive Edge, which is the show that Thorin and I do on the Esports Bet YouTube channel. And if you leave a comment with your username, you can enter onto that, or you can place a $10 bet on our match of on the match of the week for LFN, which will be Cloud Nine versus Mad Lions, and you will get double if you win the raffle and you've placed up to $10 on that bet.
So the true NA versus EU match, by the way, that's the real one. Hopefully, that's what I'm hoping here, Monty. So we'll see here. Cloud Nine versus Mad Lions. That's the one that you guys can get your match of the week back on, which is also because we didn't quite finish. That's my high key one. I really want to see. There's storylines there. You've got coaching matchup between Mythy and Mac, who have been top coaches. Is MNS done exploding? Is he done imploding? We'll never know until we get to the
Is he going to take advantage of Nisqy? I don't think so.
Is he going to send Mad Lions back to Europe like they belong, according to him, obviously?
MNS is drinking a little too much North America Kool-Aid.
I'm high key excited about BLG versus KT because this one I think is extremely difficult to call given the team's current form. It's probably going to be the most hype and hopefully closest match that we see within the first round of Swiss. And I think this is like a true 50-50. I have no idea who's going to come out on top in this one.
Right. And just to clarify on mine real quick, Mac won't be making it to Korea. So like,
why not?
This is it.
He's too busy breeding.
Actually,
Owing to the fact that, here's the quote, owing to the fact that the baby can come before the due date and there are always complications, not being there is a risk I didn't want to take while he and his wife are expecting a daughter in the first week of November. So Mac being a good dad, I feel like this is the play. This is what you do. You're a father. It's the next stage of your life. So he's and it's Korea. It's harder. It's not like European travel. I don't know. I respect that move there by Mac.
It's the right choice.
But gives Cloud9 a little bit of a shot. We'll see. Dom, what's your high key match?
Oh, I already did mine. It was G2 Dom 1.
Oh yeah, G2 Dom 1. Yeah. That's probably the best one there. All right. Those are our high key, low key, no key matches here for the Swiss stage. Again, we'll be covering all of them here on LFN on Power Spike, and of course over at Dom's co-stream with the sack. He'll be doing that one. Guys, that's it. That is this week's episode. Dom, co-streams every day, right?
Yep. Same old, same old.
Monty, what will you be doing here in the next several weeks?
I might do some VOD reviews on stream during the day Korean time, which will be evening North America time. So might start hitting that up during the group stage a little bit as well. But I'm going to go do Gen G's party for their first match versus GAM on October 19th, which is also my birthday. So I will be enjoying that. An evening out with Gen G, watching them destroy a Vietnamese team.
Yeah. Convenient that that's the one that they do the viewing party on. But hey.
They didn't know who they were going to be facing. They just had something scheduled for their first match of Worlds. So I'm going to head into Seoul and enjoy that.
Yeah. I will be at TwitchCon. So if you watching on Twitch, or I'll be heading to TwitchCon the 19th through the 22nd, right? I'll be over there. So make sure to come say hi. I'll be roaming the floors. I'll be at the, you know, just I'll be around. I'll go to the Valorant meetup. I'll go to the Apex meetup. There's no League of Legends meetup. And then flying out to Korea.
Hey, man, the kids don't care about the LOL anymore.
I know there's a panel like, am I too old for this? And it's like a bunch of like known streamers that are like above 35. And I was like, wow, this is a consideration now. And League is heading that direction, but not so much yet in the East. So make sure to head over to my YouTube channel as well, where I got all the post-game interviews. They'll be going up during the Swiss stage. Oh, the Cloud9. Cloud9 has their viewing party at TwitchCon. So if you are going to TwitchCon, you want to watch Worlds, they'll have that, I think, Saturday night. I think it is Saturday night, Sunday morning. But you can head over to their league page and it has more information there. So a little free stuff there for North America and for Cloud9. All right, guys, we will catch you guys after the first round of Swiss, which will be the 23rd. So the 23rd of after the first round of Switch is when we're going to have our next episode of Power Spike. So you won't have to wait too long to see us again. But if you need to catch us, you know where we're at. Till then, we'll see you next time on Power Spike.